Good evening, America. Welcome to the Raucous Caucus, the dialogue between and among three radio hosts and you, the listener. This is Mark Levine. I host the Inside Scoop. I'm sitting with
Terry D. Kester, the doctor of democracy.
And also
Garland Nixon. And I wish I had something for the
middle. You got your TV show.
Yeah.
Anyway, I want to talk today about the sources of right-wing anger. We've seen a lot of that in the last week, and it's not just, although it's primarily focused on the angry town hall meetings of the people that are against health care insurance reform, it's broader than that, I submit. It goes all the way to all those people that are arguing, they're going to take away our guns, and the fact that gun purchases are way up, including assault rifles. It's the fact that they're lying about Obama's plan, saying he wants to kill grandma, literally, death option, that they're claiming, of course, it's a complete lie, but they're claiming it's in the bill. It goes back to the tea parties we saw a few months ago, where people were dropping tea bags into the ocean. And, of course, its most crazy manifestation, I think, is the so-called birther movement. The people that don't believe that our president was born in Hawaii, despite the fact that he's got a perfectly legitimate Hawaiian birth certificate. I guess they want to see some other evidence?
Placenta. They're looking for placenta.
Well, I guess so. Yeah, that must be. There's also actually birth notices.
Anything short of video.
There's birth notices in newspapers at the time, so it must have been a massive conspiracy of the Kenyan government to plant these birth notices 30 years, 40-something years back, all the time to, I don't know, sneak in a
Manchurian candidate.
Come on,
it's all possible.
Well, they knew he was going to be president because they saw a star in the east the day right before he was born.
It also goes to immigration. I think it's the exact same people. It's the Lou Dobbs of the world,
right,
and his supporters, and the Rush Limbaughs, and the Fox Propaganda Channel, and those that watch it. And I would submit that it's not just, it is partly racism. It's partly the fact that there are a number of Americans that don't want to see some Harvard-educated black man rise to become president of the United States.
You can take off the Harvard-educated part
of
that.
Well, that's true.
This will still be very appropriate.
That's true, but I think they don't like the idea of sort of the ruling class. But it's more than that. I would submit these are the same people that got really angry over Clinton's affair with Monica Lewinsky but don't seem to care about the affairs of the Republican governors. I would submit these are the same people that believed the Swift boat liars when they talked about John Kerry and tried to downgrade his great service to America. I would submit these are the same people that Tom DeLay sent into Miami in 2000, remember this, to cause a riot, to prevent them from counting the votes, which caused George W. Bush to help him be selected by the Supreme Court in the first place. So my question for you is, who are these people? Who's behind these people? Who's paying for these people? How much of their outrage is real? How much of it is manufactured? And what the heck are we going to do about it? That's a lot of questions. And before you answer, I want to also invite our listeners to join in the discussion. It's 202-588-0893. 202-588-0893. Who wants to go first?
It's all Eddie's fault. There's the blame. That takes
Eddie?
Care of it.
Eddie?
Oh. It's not Eddie's fault?
I don't know
no.
who Eddie
okay,
is.
No, seriously, it is one, which I hate to say, it's legitimate, and I say that reservedly, and two, it's cultural, and three, it indicates a very, very downward trend for our whole democracy. This is not the first time this is happening, and it ain't going to be the last time it's happening. It is legitimate in the sense that the Obama administration and Congress have done such a lousy job of explaining what they are doing that people are, in fact, uneasy. And that's really unfortunate. I mean, it's been mismanaged, from my opinion, from the White House and from Congress from the get-go. If you're going to sell something this big, you better have a damn good program on how to sell it. And they've created confusion. Confusion necessarily creates anxiety. Duh. Not only that, you add to that the economic situation, which everybody seems to see is helping all the rich people, but ain't helping them. So it's increased anxiety on that level. That's the legitimate side. Is that excuse what they're doing? No. But it is cultural. It's blogosphere. It's worldwide wrestling. It's football. It's trash talk. It's, you know, I heard a journalist the other day reporting years and years of journalism, years and years of getting letters. A person who'd been a journalist for like 30 or 40 years. It wasn't until about 10 years ago, 15 years ago, I forget exactly when it was, that she actually got a letter that called her stupid. the dialogue has changed entirely. It's in your face. It's trash talk. It's in your face all over the place. Americans have gotten to the point that they believe, because of the blogosphere, et cetera, that they can say whatever they want to say, however they want to say it, to whomever they say it, and that somehow that matters.
Garland.
Well, I'll say this. First of all, let me go on record as going, I'm siding with Mark tonight, Terry.
All right! Just because he wasn't here last week. Oh, man.
Well, and he bought me a falafel before the show.
Oh,
but
that was right. Don't talk about our bribes on here.
But at any rate, no, I have to disagree with that, Terry, because I feel like this. This is the same group. These people, I don't believe that this has anything, zero to do with health care. You're not going to walk around with a gun.
Did I say that?
They're walking around with guns, with threatening signs and all these things because you're afraid, if I can understand this right, that if you get health care, you're going to die. You know, I remember something with Cheney. No evidence is evidence. And now, if you get health care, it's going to kill you, which I guess means conversely that if you don't have health care, you'll live a lot longer. I don't know. But the long and short of it is this. These people are, as Mark said, I agree, they're expressing their outrage. Every time there's any controversial bill, they're going to, from now on, they're going to be doing the same thing. They're expressing their outrage.
So we're in agreement.
They're expressing their outrage, A, that there's a black president. That's a lot of it.
But they can't say that out loud, guys.
No, are you right? Number two, it was interesting. Jon Stewart on The Daily Show did a little skit that was pretty funny. But he was showing all these people saying, this is not the America I grew up in. I want my America back. You know, and he said, of course, I don't think the Native Americans would agree with you, you know, asking for your America back. But the long and short of it is, I think when we look at these people, I think they're a problem. I think they're dangerous. I think they're the same ones as I felt then that tried to institute a coup against Bill Clinton. That was a coup attempt, in my opinion. They attempted to remove the duly elected president.
And it was a successful coup when they removed the duly elected Al Gore in 2000.
Right. So, I'm with Mark. This is a bad group of people. They've been doing this stuff, and they're very, very dangerous.
But if you downplay this to a small group of people, you're really missing the point.
Let me be
it's
in
not
between.
A small
I didn't say they were small.
People.
Hold on.
Okay.
Let me,
and it's and
rabid.
It, you know.
Let me be in between.
They are
the
rabid.
Two of you
there's
here.
No question about that.
Let me be the truth. There's always going to be some people that believe in wacky conspiracy crazy theories. And, yep. And I have to say the left has them as well as the far right. I think that the craziest wacky conspiracy is this birther idea. Because that you have certificated proof that it's just – they're just wild. They're wrong. It's like the people that said that Obama was a Muslim and passed right. those emails around. And those are some either real blooming idiots, and we have some in America, or there are people that manipulate them in order to get what they want. The Republican Party, for example, recently, there was a vote by the Democrats to say, you know, Obama was born in America, and that they had some 380 people vote for it in the House, and some 50 Republicans abstained. Now, no one voted no. There were no Republicans stupid enough to say, I think Obama wasn't born here. But 50 Republicans basically were saying, I want the ignorance to prevail. Mm-hmm. And I would suggest it's much broader than that. That's the most extreme conspiracy theory. I think we have, in the healthcare debate, in the cap and trade debate, we have some huge, massive moneyed interests. I mean, think about the fact that healthcare is 1/6 of our nation's economy, that every $6 spent anywhere on anything, on housing, on food, on cars, on trips, 1 out of every 6 is spent on healthcare in America. It's a massive, massive amount of money. Some 30% of it is just sheer profits off the top to insurance companies. It's more than we spend on housing or on food or anything. And so they have this massive amount of money, and the pharmaceutical companies are profiting, the insurance companies are profiting, and what they're doing is they're taking this fear that Republicans have whipped up for the last couple decades.
But we're leaving out one big fact, and that's media. Media plays this like a bad harp. You know, and that's the part of the real cause. I mean, they don't go to a rally and witness a discussion, which there is at many of the rallies. They pick out the one bozo who's wearing the gun.
But
they're
designed to do that.
Yeah.
I know.
That's why it works. But I mean, this is a self-perpetuating, self-fulfilling problem. And it is very broad in our culture. It is very broad. I mean, all you got to do is go on any blog, your own blog included, I'm sure. There's always people there who think the best thing they can possibly do is swear at you and call you stupid or a moron or an idiot, left or right. we have destroyed and we are destroying dialogue. And we, as we destroy dialogue in this country, we're destroying democracy. It's not just, it's not enough to just blame a few people. It is much broader than that.
Well, another thing is this. We just...
Scares me.
We can't accept the premise, and even in this conversation, there's, I don't want to see us accept one premise. The premise that this is some kind of a grassroots movement because people are tired or they're upset because of what they heard. The more you look into it, the more you find that huge corporations...
Oh, you're talking conspiracy theory here now.
No, but that's not
provable.
This is unprovable.
This is not a conspiracy theory. Yeah. These are people...
They don't even need to do that.
This is not a conspiracy theory. They're paying people. They're busing people. They're literally, I'm not making this up. They're literally paying people to come in here. It's not a grassroots movement.
You're missing the point.
They want us to think it is.
It's both. Look, the latest polls show that some 70% of Americans still support health care reform. Now, it's going down. Depends on how you classify it.
And how you ask the question.
And how you ask the question. But about two-thirds of Americans support health care reform. One-third don't. Now, those one-third that don't are legitimate human beings. They may work for insurance companies. They may work for pharmaceutical companies. They may just be misinformed and watch a lot of the Fox propaganda channel. They are real. They are a minority. But they do get a lot of coverage because, as Terry pointed out, they've been taught to yell and scream and shout obscenities and wear guns and do all the things that get media play.
That's right.
And they're taught, this is socialism, this is terrible, but they never want to seem to stop Medicare or firefighters or the post office.
The VA.
Or the Veterans Administration. Exactly. So, in fact, you may have seen this. Just recently, one of my favorites in Congress, Congressman Anthony Weiner of New York, put forward a bill that would end Medicare. Now, obviously, he didn't support ending Medicare.
Right.
But all these Republicans that claim that the government can't do anything right, that socialism is terrible, he wanted to see how many Republicans would vote for his amendment, and none did.
A bagel, buddy. Zero. Not one of them.
Zero did. So the question is, I think there have always been, throughout American history, there have been, I'm sorry, I'm going to call it this way, ignorant people who've been whipped up by moneyed interests to support their agenda.
To be sure.
You generally, can go back to the Civil War and the people fighting for the South, three-quarters of white people didn't own slaves. Who are they fighting for? I mean, you have moneyed interests who convince people through media. You in Montana, right before President Obama went there, one TV ad was shown 115 times. Paid for by health insurance companies to whip up support. So I guess what I'm saying is I agree with both of you. There is that anger out there. It is a minority, but the moneyed interests whip it up to become...
It's a minority on this issue, to be sure. But that kind of emotional reaction is becoming across the board.
You're right about that.
Liberal and conservative. I mean, the kind of dialogue that existed 20, 15 years ago, be it on the Senate floor or amongst people, just doesn't exist anymore. I mean, it is always a shout.
Well, wait a minute. 10 or 15 years, when the Republicans took over in 94, I don't think the dialogue was really that good then.
No, it wasn't.
It is nothing like today.
I think it's gotten worse and worse.
You wouldn't have 10 years ago a Secretary of Defense walking into the Senate and saying the F word to another senator. I mean, that's the level that we have started down a long time ago.
Talking about Dick Cheney.
Yeah, right. Our ex-Vice President. Yes, good buddy Dick the Cheney. But no, there's a cultural change here that has happened in this country, whether it is a violent, vicious, angry, testosterone-driven, macho, damn near fascist level of intensity and anger that's going on in this country.
But there's a reason why. And there's a reason why. Because if you have an intelligent, nuanced debate about health care, and you talk about the pluses and minuses, it bores a lot of people. And they'd rather... I'm serious.
Yeah,
and I've done those shows.
Sure.
And if you want to find them, they're on my website. I mean, check it out. I've done some really good shows on this. I'm sure you both have as well. But people want to listen to anger.
Sure.
So you have all the right wing listening to Sean Hannity on the Fox Propaganda Channel. You got people on the left that only listen to things like WPFW, which we welcome to. But what we don't have is a lot of people talking to each other. We have a lot of people talking each other.
I mean, like Rush Limbaugh is famous for not interviewing people.
That's right.
Specifically because, and he's famous for, of course, screening his calls, and he's famous for cutting off callers. I mean, he really wants to make sure that only his voice is. In fact, that's one of the things we probably should do, is when Rush Limbaugh has private speaking engagements, which he has all the time, and he collects huge fees for, we should go and help him out.
I'm not going to pay for that. Let's go. We already have Clay on the line. You can join in the discussion at 202-588-0893. 202-588-0893. Clay, welcome to the show.
Yes, welcome. I'll try to make two concise points.
Okay.
Number one, I was listening to, I guess you'd call a competitor, NPR, and interviewed a guy named Alex Jones who chronicled the death of newspapers with the rise of so-called... they chronicled the death of family-owned newspapers with the rise of so-called opinion journalism.
Yep.
Opinion journalism from the right and the left. And he singled out Olbermann, Bill O'Reilly, and Limbaugh as, you know, big glaring examples of that. So a big problem is that we do not look for local papers. We watch our cable news, and we watch their stories. And most of those stories come from syndicated press, like AP or Reuters, not from local papers. Point two, I have to say this as a mildly cogent but, you know, polite criticism. What you guys just engaged in yourself was like 15 minutes of opinion journalism. I hate to say it, you're doing exactly what Rush Limbaugh was doing, but not taking callers.
Well, we're taking callers now.
Because if you want a dialogue, you actually got a dialogue with the public. you can't fall into the same trap, I hate to say it, that Olbermann does. Even though I kind of agree with a lot of his opinions, he has this kind of glaring trumpet call for his particular kind of advocacy, which still leaves no room for too much debate. And you end up having to go to someplace like Reuters or The Guardian or something that has at least the appearance of a third-party objectivity to find out anything, you know, sharply salient without being overtly biased.
Clay?
And as far as the so-called or grassroots people, I hate to say they're the same thing as the Klan. And what do you do with the Klan? You fight them. The problem with the left is that we're not in the streets right now. I went to a town hall in Towson, and I saw really an angry crowd of white people with two or three black faces, and I saw two black guys walk by and just keep going.
Well, let me throw something out at you.
It makes sense.
Let me throw just something different out for just a moment, and that is this. What if it's not such a bad thing? You know, sometimes you see something ugly and you say, man, that looks bad. Sometimes exposure. Now, let's go back to the McCain-Palin against Obama. If we remember, there were these people out there with the monkey T-shirts, all these horrible, terrible things they were saying. Now, what a lot of people said is, Obama, you should fight back. He stuck to the issues, stuck strictly to the issues, and ignored it and allowed these people to expose themselves for who they were, and McCain was creamed, destroyed. I would submit that it is possible at times that it's a good thing to allow, I'll use this term, the other side, and yes, I am an opinionated guy, I make no excuses for that, but it's good sometimes to allow the other side to expose themselves so people can see. And guess what? You can make a decision. If you feel like you see a bunch of guys walking around with guns saying that we need to shoot people and water the Tree of Liberty and things like that, and that's the people you want to vote with and hang with, then you ought to. But I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing to expose that.
I'll tell you, I partly agree with Clay. I partly don't. Where I disagree with Clay is I want to make a distinction on opinion journalism. There's no question that I and each one of us practice opinion journalism. We give our opinion. But I would say that you have the right to your own opinion. You don't have the right to your own facts. And it's whatever. And
that's a minute.
That's a really
that destroys
important.
My show.
That it's an important point. And frankly,
you don't have the right to insult people.
Well, that's true.
I mean, you really honestly don't.
But when I see people, I don't care whether on the far left, the far right, or the center, that simply say things that are provably, demonstrably false. You know, whether it's the birther movement or something that they have absolutely no evidence for, like the 9/11 conspiracies. I see these things and I say, whoa. Let's talk about the things we know. Let's talk about the fact. Let's talk about health insurance being 1/6 of the economy, whatever it is. So I would say that I'm okay with opinion journalism as long as, one, it's fact-based, and number mm-hmm. two, as long as people then discount it based on the facts. We should have mainstream newspapers, the Washington Post saying, Rush Limbaugh lied 6 times today, Keith Olbermann lied 4 times today, and announce them and say what they are. That, to me, is the role of the neutral journalist. They need to let people know.
That's a good point, and I wish journalists would do that.
They should.
They have a responsibility to do that.
The other thing that this caller should know is that on my show, I regularly invite people who disagree with me. I even invite gasp Republicans on my show that I dispute with, including on issues like healthcare. We do allow callers here on Dialogue. But the one thing that I really think Clay was right on And I think it's the really good point he made is, where are our supporters? Why aren't we out in the street? Why aren't those of us that support universal health care and single payer out there doing our marches, being as loud, not as obnoxious, but as loud and as vocal as and as noticeable as the other side is? We're the silent majority.
But what if something else is more effective? I would argue this, that those who support who would support the healthcare reform, rather than go out on the street like these clowns and stumble around, you know, and expose how foolish you really are, here's what I think. We should be pressing those congressmen who are not voting the way we want, the way we feel they should. People will call into a radio talk show or TV talk show and feel that they've done their part, but they won't fax, email, call. If you're going to march somewhere, go to a Blue Dog Democrat and march in front of him and say, this is what has to be said, and said, tell them, don't tell me that you're not going to vote for this bill because you are so selfish, you're afraid you're going to lose your seat. If that's the case, when I voted you in, you should have said to me, I will represent you, I'll do what's good for the American people. Unless I'm scared I'm going to lose my seat, then I'll vote with the Republicans. That's what they should be told, and that's what we should be telling them. Furthermore, they should be told this. You know, as a blue dog, and you got 58% Republicans or whatever in your district, you know that if you vote in favor of single-payer or public option or whatever with all these Republicans, you may lose your seat. If you vote against it, you will lose your seat, because the progressives and the Democrats in this district will do you in the primaries. So we need to hold them responsible. I think what we need to do is stop sitting on the sidelines and griping and saying our representatives aren't doing what we want them to do. Wait till the battle's over and see, and the smoke clears to see who's win. Get in the fray and make sure these people do what they want to do. What they need to do.
One thing that scares me is President Obama, apparently last weekend in Montana, suggested he may back away from a public option.
I'm willing to say on air
that if President Obama backs away from public option, I will oppose this health care reform plan, and I urge everyone to do it. Because while I'm pragmatic and I'm willing to have a small public option that grows over time, if there's no public option,
there's no health care reform.
Exactly.
Oh, that was a brilliant move.
It's just a giveaway to insurance companies the way it's a giveaway to pharmaceutical companies. And I think that all the progressive Democrats need to stand firm and say, President Obama, if there's no public option, you lose all our votes. And there may be 40 Blue Dog Democrats. We got some 80 progressive Democrats.
You know, can I say something? Gosh, that was a brilliant move. What a brilliant move. Okay, first of all.
What was a brilliant move?
That was such a brilliant move.
What was?
Let's not be naive. You're being sarcastic. No, I'm not. I always go back to when Gordon Brown always took over for Tony Blair and said, we're going to support the United States. We're going to continue with our troops in Iraq, and we, you know, this is a great mission. While he was taking the troops out of
Iraq. Oh, so you don't believe Obama. It's all a ruse.
Okay, first of all, they're coming after him now, right, for the public option.
Right.
Okay, so what if I don't fight for the public option? Now, I know he's not stupid. He meets with Pelosi and Reid every day. Do you really think
he's good cop, Congress is bad cop?
Do you really think for one second that he doesn't already know this thing won't go through with a public option? Are you naive enough to believe that he's shocked? Oh, my gosh. It won't go through without a public option. That's pretty naive. He already knows it. They already know who's ready to go
through
it.
I think you're wrong.
Let me finish. He didn't say that. What did he say?
He said public option or no public option.
He said, if somebody can come up with something better, I'm willing to listen to it. Right? If they can come up with something better. But now, Congress. Now, what does Congress say? They all stand up and say, we won't get this thing through without a public option. Now he can step aside and say, guys, you know, I would have worked with you, but hey,
besides,
these guys over in Congress, they won't do anything else. It's not my fault.
Garland, besides the Blue Dog Democrats, there are scores of Democrats that will not support, when it comes push to shove and final vote, the public option. It will not pass with Republicans, and it will not pass with enough Democrats. Because there's too much money and too much power behind it.
Predicting defeat?
On that issue, yes. Unless Obama really makes, and if he backs down, there's no chance.
Don't you think maybe they'll do this? Here's the other old trick. Don't you think they'll take it out of the Senate bill, push it through the House, let the Senate bill go without it, and then when they come together for reconciliation
for the conference, a committee. I hope you're right. I do want to get other callers because Clay attacked me for not getting enough callers. So let's get more callers.
202-588-0893.
Jake, welcome to the show.
Yeah, hi. I was wondering if you could delve more into or talk more about the connection between democracy and the media in terms of, like, I think Terry said earlier it was a cultural failing, and
yes.
whether that means it was a failure of democracy.
Both.
In terms of to what extent reality TV has become seized and how that has contributed to, I guess,
as I've, Jake, you're right. You're right. This is very important, and I've been preaching this, and forgive me for preaching this, for years because of my profession in theater. My profession in theater has been, frankly, to put on a good play, which means to learn how to manipulate you, the audience's emotions.
You can.
Yeah.
Politics has always been about manipulating emotions. That's nothing new.
No, but what is new are the tools to manipulate. Before, you could manipulate within your local area. You could manipulate, you know, on the floor a little bit. Now you can manipulate across a broad spectrum. Now you have, where you didn't have before, incredible craftspersons whose sole talent and art and craft is to manipulate emotion. This is a confluence of events tied to the growth in media, tied to the growth in television and the growth in communication, that is damn near destroying democracy. It is very easy. It is very easy to manipulate emotion. And you saw that in the beginning of the Iraq War, and you're seeing it again now. It is easy to do with the craft and the tools that modern
communication has. What's your answer? How do you fix it? Because I got one.
I had one that I hoped would actually happen. I hoped that as people themselves got more and more media savvy, and more media literate, which they are, of course, with their own computers and their own videos.
Yeah, the internet, a lot of people going there for the
news. I thought that they would begin to realize what is going on. I have not seen any evidence of that at all yet.
I think what the internet does, and what, frankly, Fox News and even MSNBC does, is people divide. They decide what they believe in first. I'm a liberal, I'm conservative, my parents were that way. And then they go to people that they already agree with and listen to them, and they don't listen to the other side. And I really think that the only way out of this is for so-called neutral journalists. And again, I'm not against opinion journalism. I am one of them.
I was about to say, leave me out.
But CNN or the New York Times, whatever it is, I once did a paper on Joe McCarthy in the press. So I know that this is nothing new. Joe McCarthy, of course, did the Red Scare and ended up blacklisting thousands, tens of thousands of Americans by calling them communists, what they weren't.
And that was just the beginning of use of media,
but here's
which
what,
is a good point.
Here's one thing that the media did back in that time, and like I said, I did a whole research project on this. McCarthy would say Owen Lattimore is a communist, and they'd run that story, and then they'd have Owen Lattimore denies he's a communist, and they think they were showing both sides.
Mm-mm.
What they never explored was whether or not the guy was a communist.
Of course not.
Okay, they said McCarthy says he is, Lattimore says he isn't, and they didn't give us that third opinion, which says, and by the way, there's no record he's a communist.
Right.
We need the neutral, so-called neutral sources. That's
it's not
why
a, it's not a question. It's not just a question of the news media. I'm not just talking about that. What I'm talking about, I don't know if you even know this, but in commercial television, the word content refers to advertising. It does not refer to the material, the story, or the news. Content is advertising. That's what's important, the art of manipulating people. And the same people who are doing the fantastic advertising that have got you guys out buying Viagra by the gallon or whatever form it comes in.
Speak for yourself.
How dare you expose me on national radio here.
You know, the same tactics. I mean, I've worked with companies. You know, we can make anybody look good on television. You know, we can manipulate so easily what people see. It's just frightening.
We have
it's
to take a break. We've got all our lines full. We will get to all your calls right after this. And we are back here on Dialogue with the Raucous Caucus. We're going to try to tone it down a little bit and have more time for your calls, but we probably won't tone it down at all. All right, 202-588-0893. Bobby, you're on the air. Talk to us.
If you need help.
Oh, we lost Bobby.
No, Bobby was just asking us if we needed help.
I think we lost Bobby. If we've lost Bobby, let's go on to Joan.
But call back, Bobby.
All right, call us back, Bobby. Joan, please.
Yes, hi.
Talk to us.
Interesting discussion. Thank you for it.
Thank you, Joan.
I wanted to basically go back to the healthcare issue. I don't have much to say at this point about the media, except that I read the Wall Street Journal regularly, and several other sources like the Journal are just so sounding a constant narrative against the Obama plan or any form of opening up the system to government support away from private for-profit entities, that it's really disgusting. I went into the, I am, let me just say, I have a master's in public health. I'm a public health specialist in maternal and child care. And I went into the field 30 years ago because I thought at that time that the United States was going to be adopting a national health care plan, a single-payer plan, which was the substance of Ron Dellums. Congressman Ron Dellums of California had a bill before the House during the 70s that was really progressive. And it included not only a single-payer plan for the delivery of medical and surgical and dental and psychiatric care services, but it also included subsidies for medical schools, scholarship to bring minorities and underprivileged youth into the medical professional career system, and so on. Well, needless to say, having prepared myself for what I thought was going to be a major shift in national policy, I ended up having several jobs in the field as a health educator with the Apache Indians, as a
Tell me, Joe, what do you make of this opposition? Where do you think it comes from?
Well, I think it comes from the private medical plans, from the AMA. Blue Cross Blue Shield was started as a nonprofit entity back in the 1930s as a way of providing income for doctors and hospitals during the Depression when people couldn't even afford to go to the doctor. It gradually shifted over the past, 70 years into a for-profit, mostly for-profit. I think there may be still a few nonprofit Blue Cross Blue Shield plans somewhere in the country. Well, I don't know where they are.
Do you see any hope now, Joan, for the single-payer option?
Or even the public option.
The public option, yes.
Well, I think the one point that you've made that I think is quite right is that we have to hold Obama's feet to the fire. We have got to get more juice on Congress. I don't know how we're going to do it. When I heard Pelosi announce right at the beginning of this administration that the single-payer was off the table, single-payer was not an option, I knew the thing was doomed from the beginning.
We need a counter-revolution. I mean, if they're taking to the streets and the town hall meetings, we got to take to the streets and flood those town hall meetings.
Well,
I agree we have to call Congress, too.
That indeed, this great debate, flooding all the airwaves and the media, may be the lead-in to some really basic changes in this society. We've got to have it.
We can't let it fail. I mean, Truman failed, Hillary Clinton failed.
But
thank you for your call,
Joe. I also want to say one more thing.
Real quick.
I'm 78 years old, and one of the myths that's been circulated is that younger people favor single payer, older people don't. It's not true at all. I'm definitely single payer all the way, and so are two of my organizations. And I want people who are thinking about who is supporting this. Gray Panthers has been for single-payer from the beginning, and we have a very active Gray Panther chapter here in Washington, D.C., and the national office is here in D.C., and another organization that's been active for a lesser time, but for the past 15 years, is Healthcare Now, and I would suggest anyone who's interested in joining the call or seeing what we're doing and trying to build an advocacy stream, check out both their websites, Healthcare Now and Green Panther.
Thank you for your call, John.
And thank you for your activism, too, and your work.
Thank you for all of it. That comes back to the point that I keep saying. You know, there's a lot of people who are, you know, concerned, but there's not as many people who are willing to do anything. One thing I always say, unfortunately, there are a lot of progressive organizations. One might be, you know, for the spotted owls, and another one's for something else, whatever. The problem is they all go in different directions. If, in fact, we could start getting progressive coalitions where we could get all of these stray progressive organizations going in different directions to come together sometimes for things such as this, to get together here and there, not every day, you know, you like your spotted owls and you like the environment, whatever you like, but everybody get together at certain times that are critical and say, we're all going to send letters to whoever it is and say, all this umbrella of 50 organizations, if you don't do what we want, you're going to pay the price. That's the kind of things that has to start happening.
The number is 202-588-0893. Sean, welcome to the show.
Threats and intimidation. That's what I'm calling for. Oh, sorry about that, Sean.
Talk to us, Sean.
Shut up, Garland. I'm sorry.
Go for it, Sean. We're listening.
Love the subject matter. A couple of things I want to mention very quickly. I believe that, like the previous caller was saying, single payer is really the way to go, but what the pink elephant in the room that we don't want to acknowledge is the insurance company.
That's right.
Yep.
When you talk about single payer, you really are talking about the end of the insurance companies and their involvement with the healthcare industry. And
you know, when a man is sitting in a room with a pile of gold and sort of bathing in it and throwing it all around, and you say, you know what, you're not going to get that gold anymore, they get very upset, and they spend every last dime they can to protect their access to all of our money. It's 1/6 of the American economy, and 1/3 of it is their profit, their administrative costs. That's a massive amount of money, and they're going to go down fighting.
And one of the best things that Obama did, Sean, and I suspect you would agree, is to bring up this whole thing of that this is about a insurance reform.
Right, healthcare reform.
That is the correct phrase to use. I don't know, he may have brought it up too early. You can question timing forever, but it's really a good point.
We should call. In fact, I made the mistake. I need to call it health insurance reform.
I agree. I think some people should maybe cut the president maybe a little slack, not a whole lot. Keep his feet to the fire, but definitely. Make it, you have to give them a little credit because basically any solution at this point would have to involve the insurance companies going along with it because the power to really shut them down.
I hate that though, Sean. I mean, I don't want to concede that point. If the insurance companies go along with it, like the pharmaceutical companies appear to maybe going along with it because they're going to get their share, then to me, there's no reform at all. Because the reason why our care costs twice as much as every other industrialized nation
but that's not,
is because the insurance companies.
No, I actually heard a discussion on Bill Moyers, a show, a journalist that I certainly respect, from a very conservative point of view, and a conservative guest that he had on there, pointing out some things that could be done that would please the Republican Party, that would please the conservatives. And they were good points and good reforms that could be made that would actually help insurance companies and would therefore...
Give me an example, Terry.
Simply the simple fact that every single state has its own insurance regulations.
Oh, yeah, I'm okay with that.
Right.
And financially, this is a huge expense for the insurance companies.
Yeah.
So if you gave them that we're going to create a national set of standards for the insurance companies, then you'd have something to trade with. Right now, the Democrats aren't talking to the Republicans, and the Republicans aren't talking to the Democrats, and democracy ain't working.
But I got to be clear about that. Sometimes when you have a national standard, you have a race to the bottom. We've seen that with Delaware and corporate law.
Yeah.
We've seen this with South Dakota and credit cards. What I would do is I would say that insurance companies can sell in any state they want, but they still got to meet state standards. So that if you have a state setting a higher standard in, say, California than in South Dakota, if they want to compete in California, they still got to do that. Otherwise, I really do fear we have the race to the bottom that we have with credit card companies and corporations. So with that caveat, I agree with you.
And it could be negotiated. And that would help.
And to add what he said, I do. I think we have to cut the president not a little bit of slack, a whole lot of slack.
I don't like what he said in Montana last weekend.
Let me tell you why. Let me tell you why. President Obama said back in February, and one of the guy from Iowa, I believe it was, said he talked to the president and said, you know, this is dangerous stuff, healthcare reform. And the president said, you know what? It may make me a one-term president, but I'm going to tackle this thing. Here's what I'm saying. You can say I don't like what he's doing and he shouldn't do single payer, triple payer, double payer, whatever you want to call it. Nobody had the guts to take this on before him. Nobody fought for it. Harry Truman took it on and failed. Hillary Clinton took it on and failed.
Even Bill Nixon took it on.
Hillary Clinton was not the president.
Well, Bill Clinton took it on.
Took it on? Not to this extent. He didn't take it on to this extent.
I think he did.
No one has taken it on to this extent.
But I think he really tried.
President Obama has pretty much staked this as the cornerstone of his presidency. Who else beside him? Do you think someone else would have gotten it on this? Nobody's going to do it.
Because of that, the Republicans are saying if they can defeat this, that's why this isn't about health care. It isn't about health care at all. It isn't about even health insurance. Republicans, the Just Say No party, are saying if we can destroy Obama on this, we can destroy him on everything. They're already saying on the Fox propaganda channel, well, you know, if he does this, he's a lame duck president. Lame duck! 1 year into it.
Yeah, who would want to think about the 46 million people with no health care?
Okay.
They're irrelevant.
But all of that means is he has got to lead the battle.
Well, you're right.
And he cannot,
I'm with you on this one, Terry.
He cannot lead it by going up and saying, well, we don't really have a bill yet, you know, and the House doesn't really have one. He has got to say, this is what this country needs.
And I think
this is how it needs it. And he is still being too vague.
He has to insist on a public option.
Yes,
I just think
absolutely.
He's
and I believe that he will. But
we'll
I
see.
Just think, in my opinion, mean, this
guy. Usually, I defend the guy, but today I'm upset.
I think? I just think his tactics are different, and a lot of people just don't understand it. Do you remember Bill Maher coming out saying he should be more like George Bush? Because people are comfortable with that. They don't understand the type of tactics these guys are doing. They're not different.
I hope you're right, Carl. I hope he's more brilliant. Yeah. He's got it all figured out.
I hope you're right. Everyone said, we want change. And he said, I'm going to do things a different way. But people can't handle it. They want him to go back and do like George Bush and bully everybody. He's not going to do it.
Yeah, but you say that, Garland, and then you look back at the financial situation, and all that is, for the most part, despite maybe his best intentions, is a surrender to the capitalist. I mean, it really honestly is. With Geithner and everybody else, they have just gone right down the line of what the corporations and the capitalists and the owners and the stock owners and the hedge fund guys wanted.
Gentlemen, our callers are completely full.
No,
they are waiting. Right. So I'm going to ask each caller to please state what you want to say, but try to keep it to maybe a minute or two so we can get to each caller. Paul, you're on the line. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, great to finally be on.
sorry about that.
thank you, Paul.
What Terry said a little while ago, it occurs to me is when he was talking about what's going on in the country with a lack of consciousness around what's going on in the process. People get caught up in the debate over the issue, which I call the content. And a lot of people lose sight of the process. You talked about the tools that are used to manipulate people.
Mm-hmm.
There was a great documentary a while ago. It's probably the best I've seen. And I think points where enough people need to go in order to learn how they're manipulated. It's called The Century of the Self. It was a BBC documentary.
The Century of what?
Century of Self.
Ah, yes.
Of Self.
And it goes over the origins of public relations consulting. Very well done. But it gives to the person that views it a sense of the tools that are used to emotionally manipulate them into following a course of belief or action. And that's the content that gets used. So, Terry, you were describing that.
Yep.
But what I think we need in terms of voters is enough people that are educated in how they're manipulating that voice is out in the public.
And that should be something, frankly.
I don't know that people ever look behind the curtain.
No.
But
that should be taught in our public schools, frankly.
When we're being used and how we're being used.
Sure, it's been done for generations.
You can look at demagoguery.
You can look at that fascism. You can look at communism. You can look at any of these things. Manipulating people's emotions is an old, tried and true political trick.
Yeah, and do we teach? I mean,
we should teach it.
We should be teaching that in schools.
I agree with you.
This is how you are manipulated. This is how you will tend to respond.
Emotions, right.
This is how your emotions and thought process is influenced. You have to be on the lookout for this.
That would be nice. Let's go on to Adam. Nice. Adam, talk to us. What are your thoughts?
Hi. Yes, I'm actually a first-year public school teacher. Good timing on that one.
High school?
Congratulations and thank you.
And my the thing that I've been thinking about recently is that this education isn't just something that needs to happen in the public schools. It needs to happen in the public sphere.
Well, you're right.
There needs to be a system by which these legislations that are 1,200 pages long and all sorts of lingo that the average guy can't understand is posted in its full length with teaching tools to educate the public on exactly what is in the bill, so that when discussions come up, you can, on your own, determine whether or not you're being fooled or not.
Let me be honest with you about the problem here. And I'm an ex-legislator, okay? I used to work as an attorney in Congress. The problem is that, first of all, we don't have one bill. And that makes things very confusing.
Right.
It's very hard to tell people what's in, quote, the bill when there's, four bills in the Senate and five bills in the House.
Right. It's amazing the intensity of this debate, and we haven't got a bill.
Right. So everyone is complaining about something that doesn't exist. That's why when they talk about these death panels and Obama's going to kill grandma, when all there was end-of-life counseling if you want it voluntary. Okay. So part of the problem is we don't have a single bill. And also, I guess I have to defend the legislative process to the extent of a 1,200-page bill. I heard John Stewart complain, why does this thing have to be 1,200 pages? Well, it's 1/6 of our economy. If you want to reform 1/6 of our economy, it's going to be complicated. Take a look at Medicare. Take a look at Social Security. Take a look at the post office. These things do tend to be complicated. I agree with Adam that we need to have an explanation of each and every part of the bill, but really the problem right now is that Congress can't agree amongst themselves as to one or even two bills. If we get to one bill in the House and one bill in the Senate, then Adam's absolutely right. We need to put it on
and explain these things. And this is this confluence that frankly frightens me, because not only have you got the confusion, now you have the confusion feeding what Congress is doing. So you not only do you have a confused bill and confused discussion in Congress, you have the confusion outside combined with all the anger. It's a vicious, vicious circle. We are not going to get a good bill here unless some clarity is introduced, and the only person that can introduce the clarity at this point is President Obama.
Not to mention that if they can put all the tools they want on the internet for learning about bills and everything. Look, if we do a show about a particular bill, the only thing we're going to hear over the call-in line is crickets chirping. People will go to sleep on you. People don't even want to hear about what's in a bill. They darn sure are not going to, you know, that's
well,
one
tell
of the
you what, I promise we that once a bill people. Is done, we will do a show right here, and I'm willing to risk the crickets chirping, where we go through and tell you what the bill does. I think it's a public service.
I guarantee you, if the White House or Congress or senators wanted to do it, you could create a short 10-minute video that would explain.
Wake up, Colin.
Trust me. I know this. I could do it myself. Hire me, Obama. You could do a 10-minute production that would explain
and
exactly
he'll do it. He'll do an address to
to
the public. You know he will. President Obama will have a primetime address where he will
I'm not talking about a primetime address. We're bored with hearing him. That's part of the problem.
You're bored with hearing him. I'm not.
Yeah, I'm not bored with hearing him. I don't think the public is. No,
they're
not.
Oh, come on. Fox News doesn't even cover him. The ratings are down at every conference he has.
The Fox propaganda channel.
The ratings are down on all of the press conferences. The ratings are down on his weekly addresses.
It's August!
And the real thing is, what you guys are missing, is he is not even using the tools that we've just been talking about half of the show on how you influence people. He has to use those same
tools.
You want
to use emotion. You want to use anger.
Yes. He's not using the tools that you're accustomed to. He's got you out of your comfort zone, and you're freaking out because you're not prepared for somebody who's going to do things different than you used to.
No, because he's not using the tools that are affecting the public.
Let's see what the public thinks. Jim, welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you?
We're good. Join the Raucous Caucus. What are your thoughts?
Hold me back, Jim. Hold me back.
You know, I think you have to look at, you know, Obama was, you know, and the Democratic Party is really not really progressive. I mean, they're reacting to what? They're doing what? They're doing nothing.
Yep.
Well, they're not doing nothing. That's not true.
I wouldn't disagree with that.
They're not reform. They're not monolithic.
They need an alternative. And where did they start? They started in the middle.
Right. Well, you're right about that.
Not single payer. So when you negotiate from the middle, where are you going to go?
Jim's
right
about that. They should have started with single payer and then negotiated to a public option as a compromise.
You know,
I agree with that.
I would argue that a public option over a few years is going to accomplish what you want because it's going to knock everybody out. Give it 2 or 3 years.
Wait. Jim had a little bit. Yeah, go ahead, Jim. Sorry,
single payer was never on the table, right? It was off the table from the beginning.
Yep. It's an absurd position.
I think Jim's right.
Try to build consensus. What are you going to get?
I think Jim's right. You start with single payer, and then you negotiate and say, okay, we'll accept a public option. And then I think, Garland, you're right. After a few years, public option becomes single payer because everyone prefers the cheap government plan over the expensive insurance plan. But Jim's right. If you start in the middle, there's no room left to negotiate.
I know, and this is what bothers a lot of us on the progressive side and in the business. You know, is given the size of this reform, which you've pointed out, you know, very, very dramatically, you know, Mark. Given the size of this reform, you should have thought this out and the tactics out from the beginning, and you should use the tools that are needed to educate, influence the people. This constant blathering from both sides are not the tools that are going to accomplish this.
I also think he's partly being stymied by Congress. I mean, really, if Congress had gotten this out before the August recess, one House bill and one Senate bill, I think the tone of the debate would have been very different. It's hard to defend a bill that doesn't exist yet. And one thing that we can do, all of us and everyone listening to my voice and to Terry and Garland's voice right now, she can go and call our member of Congress, and if you live in D.C., call Eleanor Holmes Norton, and ask them to come to some agreement with a public option, you know, other details we can negotiate, but get something out there, because once Congress agrees, they can have a united front and defend it. Right now, they still can't come to an agreement.
No. And people should think about the fact that that single payer, you're going to have a nonprofit organization against profit organizations. The Republicans know that this that the public option is going to lead to single payer. It's going to wipe the other ones out. They know what it's going to do.
That's why the insurance companies hate it so much.
Yeah, they know what it's going to do. That's an overstatement, and you're giving them ammunition. And Obama himself pointed out that in the Netherlands particularly, they have both public option and private
Canada
interest.
Canada allows private,
and,
too.
And so does Canada. So does England.
No, but most people choose the public option.
But it does not wipe them out. And that that's a phony threat.
In fact, now that I come to think of it, it will probably actually increase the number of people that join.
I got to tell you,
I wouldn't be surprised.
It's a hard debate to make, though. And it's something that Obama is getting tripped up on, because he's saying the government can do it better. And then people are saying, well, that'll put insurance companies out of business. He's saying, well, no, it won't put them out of business. Those two arguments conflict with each other.
Yes,
and
I think we need to
recognize that they do.
And this is the lack of clarity.
And let me tell you how you unpack it, how you unpack the contradiction.
Alrighty.
All you do is you say, we're going to have a public option, and we're going to put it in the marketplace, and we're going to see how it does. And if it works better than the insurance companies, then that's life. Frankly, I don't cry for the village blacksmith either. Cars worked better than horses. And if the insurance companies work better, then if the government option isn't working, we'll end it after a few years. You put it forward as a trial thing. You throw it up against the wall and see whether it works or not.
I think more than anything else, Mark, the White House has got to get you, me, and Garland around the table and straighten this out.
Absolutely.
You know what? I think you finally found
the answer. Let's see if Bob agrees with that, Terry. Bob, welcome to the show.
Hi.
Hey, Bob.
Most people who are under 65 don't know what it costs an individual to buy Medicare.
Amen.
This year it's $96 and maybe 32 cents a month per person.
Yep.
And that's, you know, hospitalization, doctor's visits.
That's cheap.
Plus Part D.
These are people who are elderly and have
medical problems. That's cheaper than I pay.
Yeah.
So plus Part D.
Really, what this shows is that is the true cost of insuring somebody, $96 a month. It's not $1,000 a month for a family of four, you know, like we pay. It should be $400 for four.
That's interesting. I didn't realize it was that low. I need to talk to my older relatives. My own parents, they have Medicare.
We'll have no idea cheap Medicare is and really how cheap insurance actually is. So I want that deal. I mean, that is the public option that would be very easy to expand, and we know what it would cost roughly.
To be fair, Medicare is running out of money, but you could increase that 50%. It'd be $150 a month.
It's
still be less than what I pay.
It's Medicaid that's really more in the trouble than Medicare, much more so. And the other thing to do about Medicare, Bob makes some really good points. I don't know of a single person who uses Medicare that is dissatisfied
with
it.
Well, you know,
a single one. And find me anybody that's got a real medical problem and has to deal with an insurance company, and I'll tell you personally, that's going through hell.
Yeah, and they talk about the death panels and the bureaucrats. I don't know if you know a lot about HMOs, but they're denying coverage for people every day.
10,000 people a day are being removed from insurance company rolls. 10,000 a day.
Do you know I had a problem with his health care in January 2008 and complained about it publicly on CNN? Guy by the name of Glenn Beck, who said health care. And already 18 months later, he's saying the United States has the best health care ever. But when he was treated, he complained and complained and complained. But maybe the fact that he went from CNN to Fox may have changed his point of view.
The other thing is a lot of people allegedly have health care. They'll buy. There are plans you can buy out there that are not as expensive. They have $5,000 and $10,000 deductibles.
$20,000, up to $20,000.
Yeah. A lot of people who are on the rolls as having, quote, health care have a $5,000 deductible because that's the only thing they can afford. So it's basically catastrophic care is all it really is.
Particularly if you have a pre-existing condition, that's usually about all you can get. Let's go to Tony. Tony, welcome to the show.
Hi.
Hey, Tony.
I got an email from Kucinich today, and basically, you know, he's stating what he stated in a bunch of his emails. Obama has never been pushing for the Medicare single-payer option. You know, he only mentioned it when he ran for president, and ever since, you know, the Rahm Emanuels of the world have grabbed him and made him do exactly what the drug companies, insurance companies want. He's a continuation of Bush. Ooh, when I hear no,
that's too far.
Yeah, you wouldn't have.
I mean, we can criticize him, but I think the continuation of Bush is really.
Yeah, you wouldn't have.
Are we in Iraq more than ever? Are we in Afghanistan? Have you spent trillions on the banks?
There's a lot of things.
Given all this money to the insurance companies.
Tony, there's a lot of things I disagree with Obama about, as you've heard me say. But you wouldn't have Sotomayor, you know, with George Bush here. I mean, you know, there are differences and there are different things happening. You have a totally different head of the EPA. You have a wholly different head of the Energy Department.
Attorney General. Look at this. Attorney Gonzalez. Yeah. Eric Holder. I mean, talk about night and day.
Legislatively, I am not pleased, but legislatively, I don't think the system can work, frankly. But in terms of who he's appointing, and there's a lot of difference.
You have to have a pretty rigid view of politics to not see a difference between these two people. Right. I mean,
Look, I think at the end of the day, President Obama is a pragmatist. He's always been a pragmatist. He ran as a pragmatist. He said he prefers single payer. I take him at his word that he did prefer single payer. But people came to him in Congress and wherever and said, you're not going to get this through.
Yep.
And look, I understand the need for compromise. I'm one of those people that supports, for example, the cap and trade bill, even though I recognize it's not perfect because I see you have to get your foot in the door. And
don't get me started.
No, but at the end of the day, all right, it seems to me that you start with what you want. And this is where Jim's comment was absolutely right.
Yes.
You start with what you want, and then if you have to bargain it down to get 80, 70, 60% of what you want, okay, that's politics. I get that.
Yep.
But caller Jim, I got to give him a lot of credit. I think he made the best point tonight, not that other callers didn't make also good points, when he said you start with what you want, and then you negotiate down. And that,
you
I
also
think was
make
mistake.
It clear to the American people what you want and why you want it.
Right.
It can't just be a repeated slogan, Mr. Obama.
Well, and I think he has to come back.
President Obama, I'm sorry.
He's starting to come back against these charges of socialism, you know, and he's starting to say, hey, you know,
red baiting
the post office, right? For 40-something cents, we can get this piece of writing across the country. That's amazing. You know, the Veterans Administration, I don't know any veteran that wants to go off government-run health care. Medicare, socialism. You pointed out, Terry.
Yeah,
people are happy with Medicare. You know, he's got to
go into campaign mode. He really honestly
does. And he needs to get the same grassroots people that elected him, the same Facebook pages, the same social networking, the same grassroots out there.
And maybe the same people, and I was one of them, and I'm happy to say, that's out there going door to door as well.
I think we need to do all of that. I think he needs to treat this like a presidential campaign. I agree with you.
It is like a presidential campaign, and it's a real true measure of our democracy and whether or not it can function to a social need.
And I think the people on our side, some people have been losing so long, they don't know when they won.
That's true.
And a lot of people on our side, you know, we're getting in a circular firing squad. You win, you get your guy in. Now, and here's what I say. You couldn't stand George Bush. He's the worst thing in the world. Obama gets in, he's the worst. Who the heck do you want?
Exactly.
What do you want? The people you
I'm
want
I'm willing to criticize President Obama, but I will never, ever compare him to George Bush. No. We got to wrap this up, guys. Our hour is up. I hope you enjoyed the Raucous Caucus. This is Mark Levine. If you want to find out more about me, go to my website, RadioInsideScoop.com.
Terry D. Kester, WPFW.org. And don't forget, on the first Tuesday of every month, we come down to Bus Boys and Poets. We're not giving them a plug. We're giving ourselves a plug and you a plug. Come join us.
You can come meet us.
Right. And Garland Nixon, Facebook me, Garland Nixon, or you can do the edge seat.
I'm on Facebook too, Mark Levine.
Garland, I'm on Facebook too, but look, don't forgot my,
I got
I'm
so many
answer.
I got so many email addresses, I forgot which
we
way.
We have to wrap it up, but don't forget to come back every Tuesday at 7 o'clock for more of Dialogue.
Amen.